The success of Iran's retaliatory operation True Promise against the Israeli regime has changed the equations in the region. On the one hand, it has shattered the invincibility of not only the Israeli regime, but its backers, like the U.S., when it comes to defense capabilities. And on the other hand, it has shown that Iran's military might is a force to be reckoned with. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how this operation has impacted the West Asia region and whether it will impact major crises like the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war, or for it to lead for the departure of the U.S. forces, something that Iran and the resistance groups in the region want. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Sarah Flanders, International Action Center, joins us from New York. Also joining us, Vincent James, podcaster and founder of Daily Veracity, joins us from L.A. Thank you, and welcome to you both. And Vincent James, I'll start with you. Operation True Promise. I'm sure you're familiar with that. It was a successful retaliatory operation, and one of the things that it did was it broke Israel's defense capabilities. And you had 10 countries that were involved trying to basically shoot down the salvo of drones and missiles that were coming down into the occupied Palestine. Do you see that as being a defeat when it comes to the defensive action that failed, not only on the part of Israel, but also for the other countries that tried to prevent these missiles and drones from coming down?
Yeah, I think, well, number one, if we're looking at, like, the Iron Dome, for instance, I don't think that the Iron Dome is foolproof. I think that a lot of it is almost... I think it's boosted up a bit so that other countries don't get the idea that, you know, they should send missiles into Israel. I think that right now, in terms of what's happened since October 7th, I think Israel and the powers that be here in America, the Israel lobby is the most powerful lobby in Washington, D.C., and it's not even close. I think that they've really overplayed their hand, and I think that they just don't care anymore. And they're going to try to achieve the goals that they've had for a very long time by any means necessary now, right? The goal of, for instance, October 7th, they use this as a pretext to kill off Palestinians. I mean, quite frankly, to commit a genocide, quite frankly. And expand the Israeli state. And then in addition to that, if we're looking at, you know, what's going on with Iran, every single time there's a terrorist attack that happens, it's always blamed on Iranian proxies, right? The reason being is because Iran is their final boss, and it's been the final boss for a while. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, the U.S. is going to stay out of this war and Israel's by themselves, but something's going to happen. They're going to push and push and push and push and push until the U.S. basically has no choice but to enter into this conflict in some way, shape, or form.
Okay, so you're saying you're talking about Israel that's going to keep pushing and pushing. Is that what you mean?
Right, yeah, 100%.
Okay, well, that is something I'd like to address to you, Sarah Flanders, because to use the words of the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, quote, the Zionist regime's defeat was an intelligence, security, and military one, but it was a strategic setback above all. I think what our guest there talks about in that context would be the old order, because it doesn't seem like Israel can, and when it wants to, and if it desires to at this point, because firsthand it has received the military, it has felt the military might of the Islamic Republic. What do you think?
Well, it is a huge strategic setback, and a setback for Israel, a setback for U.S. imperialism. This war couldn't go on 1 minute without the billions and billions of dollars that have been provided year in, year out, 75 years, because Israel, for U.S. imperialism, was their guarantee, their strategic ally in the entire region, their war in the entire region, and they're destabilizing an engine for the whole region. And that is what they are losing. Israel cannot, will not really survive with the standing that it had, which was completely made cover and possible by the U.S. Those days are gone. in terms of the whole world, and also in terms of the very significant Iranian response to this criminal attack on Iran, on an Iranian consulate, and the world stood by and did nothing. So Iran responded, as they had every right to do. Now Israel has, it's been exposed that it no longer has the ability to protect itself, even from an announced launch, an attack that was days in the making, where every message was sent. Nevertheless, they continued in their lawlessness. So now they face a quandary, because in front of the whole world, it's been shown their vulnerability, their failure, and it's important. It's a big failure for the U.S. Their strategic ally is no more.
Sure. Vincent James, I'd like to challenge you on this idea about how they want to keep pressing and pressing. I mean, what are they going to keep pressing against is my question to you. I'm looking here, for example, of the description of these advanced hypersonic missiles that Iran has. Looking at the description that I see here, the range 1,400 kilometers, two-stage solid fueled, pinpoint accuracy. And these were the types, Fatah 1 and 2, that most likely the Fatah 2, which is a more advanced version, made it to that Nevatim airbase. I believe anywhere from 7 to 8 of them hit the intended target. And that was in a restrained mode in terms of the measured retaliatory response that Iran had. Isn't that enough for Israel to double think whether it wants to move ahead? And more so, its backer, the U.S., to also analyze the situation, which I believe the last that we know, the U.S. says, if you do go ahead with a retaliatory attack, you're on your own.
Yeah, they say that. And you know, when we talk about thinking, I don't know if we can talk about thinking or double thinking when it comes to bloodthirsty, evil, crazy, insane people. Like, I just saw some tweet just recently. Netanyahu unveils plan to construct settlements in Gaza backed by a staggering investment of $5 billion. You have Jared Kushner talking about how Gaza beachfront properties are very valuable. Now, I mean, this has been their goal for a long time, and they're going to stop at nothing. Israel, the Israeli state, the Zionist regime is going to stop at nothing. To achieve their goals. You know, they have the Samson option. This is something that was invented by Israel. And we have here in America, you have people like Mark Levin, you have people like Ben Shapiro talking about how if America doesn't get involved in these wars, then we're going to have to resort to using nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons, by the way, that they achieved after the assassination of JFK, after the Apollo affair, where they stole 600 pounds of highly enriched uranium from the U.S. through an American company owned by an American Jew. And the other guest talked about billions of dollars. It's really like $1 trillion that we've given Israel since the early 2000s, if you consider military aid, monetary aid, military equipment, and the interest that they make off of the money that we give them. And then I really, a lot of people talk about how Israel is an ally. Honestly, they've acted more like an enemy to the U.S., and this is something, speaking to Americans, Israel has acted more of an enemy to the U.S. than an ally. Israeli actions have put the lives of Americans in danger for a very long time, decade after decade after decade. We can go back to the invasion of Lebanon that we told them not to do, and then they did it anyway. Then we had to send in American Marines as a peacekeeping force, and then you had the Beirut barracks bombing that killed 241 Americans. You can look at the USS Liberty. Uh-huh. You can look at, you know, all of the Levant affair, all of these different actions by the Israeli state to achieve their goal to the detriment of American citizens and the American military. And I think that they're going to stop at nothing to achieve their goals. And one more thing on the Iron Dome. Again, the Iron Dome, I think the world has seen, is not foolproof. It's not foolproof. And technology, you know, we paid for that. The American taxpayers paid for the Iron Dome. And this is technology that they won't even hand over to the U.S. still to this day. And it's just, you know, I don't know that we can talk about thinking when it comes to bloodthirsty, evil, evil, evil criminals.
Yeah, and it's not just the Iron Dome. Actually, there are two other defense systems, like David Sling, right, I believe, and the Arrow, along with the Iron Dome, which is multi-layered, but yet those hypersonic missiles, as an example, made it through. You know, this thing with the U.S. Ironclad support that we're looking at, Sarah Flounders, even the U.S. has come out and said, and this is what the U.S. President Joe Biden said, Israelis are facing major, possibly generational damage to their reputation. Of course, the Israeli genocidal war that's backed by the U.S. Has a lot to do with that. But how badly is Israel doing? I mean, we know that its image is not, obviously, it's tarnished. World standing, not doing well. Its economy is not doing well. You're having migration out of the occupied Palestine of Israelis there. I think since October 7th, we're looking at about 700,000. And then the local population there on occupied land that they're coming out on protest almost every day. What type of condition is this regime in right now?
Well, the Israeli, the Zionist regime is in a totally untenable, unwinnable situation. And this has been proven by the resistance in Gaza, where they have failed to reach any of their aims. And it's also been shown by the actions in Yemen, which has really put a block on shipping internationally, especially to Israeli ports. Very important. And the U.S. seems powerless to stop that. So while the Zionists claim they'll stop at nothing, the fact is they are being stopped. And we should know that U.S. government will always have plausible denial. They're not responsible. But in truth, in fact, I believe the U.S. government is an enemy of the world. To say Israel is an enemy of the U.S., yeah, they're an enemy of working people in the U.S. and around the world, but the U.S. government is responsible, and U.S. corporate power is responsible for this policy of endless profit and war on the whole world, not only on the people of the Arab world, the whole world, whether you look at China or Russia, whether you look at NATO. The U.S. government and corporate power is the number one enemy, and they operate through different agents. They have been targeting Iran since the 1979 Iranian Revolution, because Iran took back its own agency, its own oil, control of its own resources. That made them an enemy of U.S. corporate power, and that's what's going on today. They want to use Israel, yes. They want to use Zionism, a colonial apartheid ideology. Yes, they want to use people of every possible right. country. That's true. But where does it flow from? It flows from Wall Street, from corporate power in the U.S. It profits from all of these wars again and again. And the fact is, technology has moved on. It's moved on past the Iron Dome. It's moved on past all kinds of huge aircraft carriers that can't be refitted and rearmed in the face even of Ansarallah drones to them. So there's a lot that is happening in technology, but the big thing that's happening is a resistance that refuses to accept the old colonial order. That's what has changed, and it is dramatic. We should really salute it, right. be with it every step. And Iran defending itself has inspired people around the world.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, this resistance that our guest is talking about, Vincent James, I can't help but to get your thoughts on the axis of resistance that comprises of countries and resistance groups. We can talk about Hezbollah, the Islamic State, the Islamic resistance in Iraq, also Yemen, as our guest there mentioned. And given the fact that these groups, of which the Islamic resistance in Iraq is comprised of over 62 It's an umbrella group, over 62 resistance groups. When you put them all together, these are all groups that Iran and them are aligned. When you take a look at the way that they're engaged, a couple of them especially, like Hezbollah, with the Israeli regime, shouldn't Israel and the U.S. take that into account and look at the calculus, given the fact that now this operation by Iran has proven what it can do, and maybe these groups can also have access to that?
Yeah, I think, this is one of the reasons why they've had such a big problem with Syria. You know, Syria was another country on there that was a target for the global American empire, for the Zionist regime, another target to destabilize, to conduct some sort of CIA color revolution regime change in. And it's because of Russia's involvement there that they have a little bit of an issue, right? There was a clandestine program that I think Barack Obama initiated during his presidency that was ended in 2017 to arm Syrian rebels against Bashar al-Assad. And so this is, I would say that America, the global American empire, if you will, has shrunken. It's become weaker over time. And it's because of these different players, or the threat of these different players getting involved, that maybe they have to approach things differently. Maybe they have to double think, as you said. But again, if you look at the history, if you look at Israel, if you look at the Israeli government, I don't think that they care. I don't think that they care. They're going to try to pull the U.S. deeper and deeper into this conflict and the other conflicts. They're going to try to get the U.S. through AIPAC, through the Israel lobby, through WNAP, through the Jewish lobby in America, through the Jewish subversion that has been around in America ever since after World War II, infiltrated the university, spread through there, infiltrated every single institution in American life. I think that they're going to. They don't care. They don't care what happens mm-hmm. to their supposed allies. I think that they're going to sure. try. They're going to fail, but they're going to try. They're going to try, and they're going to stop at nothing.
That approach, Sarah Flounders, is going to decimate an already decimated economy. There's no doubt about that. Number two, you having, as I mentioned before, the migration out of the occupied land. And these are especially for dual citizens. And they're going to continue leaving in droves if our guest scenario comes true. But what are your thoughts when it comes to the Israeli regime as a whole, Sarah Flounders? A guest once said, it's not about the military, it's not about anything but like even the boycott campaign. It's about how Israel, like South Africa, that was finally that apartheid regime ended, it's about the delegitimization of Israel around the world. That's what's going to put an end to this regime. Do you think that it has approached that point?
It's absolutely approached that point. Really, what the U.S. fears right now is that they are standing alone with a complete pariah state that is hated, that is exposed, that its crimes, everyone has seen just how horrendous and terrible they are. It is a regime built on settler colonialism, and that day has absolutely passed. And the economy of Israel, of course, is in more than shambles. It's being propped up, by lots of U.S. money and other Western EU money, but that's also, it's a sinking investment, and everyone can see that. In terms of, it's a settler state, so there are a large portion of Israelis who have dual citizenship, and they are headed back to the countries they came from in droves. They don't want to raise the most dangerous place to be Jewish in the world today is in Israel. Why stay? They're leaving in large numbers. The economy, not only are the schools shut down, or not only are the ports shut down, but most industries are shut down. And the corporations around the world that supplied equipment and investment and technology to Israel are finding it's no longer a good investment because there's so many sit-ins, walkouts, takeovers happening here in the U.S. and Britain, throughout Europe, demanding that these corporations disinvest. All of this is being felt in Israel, and they can't sustain that kind of loss anymore. So I think I don't know how many days, how long, how many years, but the settler colonial mentality that Zionism is based on, that they tried to rally a whole group of people around, those days are past. In terms of their own population, you look at these demonstrations, the hold of the population for Zionism is crumbling under their feet. And that's a big loss, too, because they're a small population within, surrounded by an Arab world, and that can't continue long at all. So I do think it's the resistance that is the one thing that has changed that, but also there is a sharing of technology. There is, I want to say, by the way, that Iran is not interested in war. They want peace, development, resources. They want exchange with the world.
Point.
And that's true for every one of these countries. They're not for continuing a war. They are for defending themselves and standing up to a colonial aggression coming from the U.S. and coming from Israel.
That is something that Iran has said, Vincent James. Of course, who's going to, on the American side or the Israeli regime side, going to listen to that? That's probably something they don't want to hear. But that is something that Iran has said. The way that this operation was carried out, this retaliatory operation, speaks volumes within that context. Why do you think the U.S. is not, or the Israeli regime, interested in that type of approach, which Iran has stated now in the past days, when it comes to the operation that it executed?
Well, the U.S. isn't interested in peace with many Arab countries for the simple reason that Israel has completely controlled and occupied our government through lobbies, through infiltration, and other means. And when it comes to the retaliatory strike, again, you know, you look at how Iran retaliated, right? We were talking about the attack on the consulate. It's interesting that all of the American news media will say, well, Israel has a right to defend itself. And what does that look like? Well, that looks like massacring 25,000-30,000 people that are mostly women and children, and then taking their homes and taking their land and giving it to Jared Kushner and other like U.S. Millionaire Jews. Iran retaliated for the attack on the consulate, and there were no civilian victims. This is, again, you go back to the CIA, the color revolution, the regime change with Mossadegh, and again, this is the final boss. I just want to get this out to Americans here. Israel is no ally of ours. They have acted more like an enemy than an ally forever. And this is something that I think a lot of people are waking up to, thanks to Twitter, thanks to Rumble, thanks to some of these other free speech platforms, thanks to your platform. I think a lot of people are waking up to this, and this adds to the fact that our other guest was talking about, that Israel is basically ending up alone in a lot of this. And
indeed,
it's kind of a dangerous place to be.
Right, indeed. Last question here, Sarah Flounders, quickly if you can. What happened in San Francisco was quite incredible, wasn't it? With that pro-Palestine protest that shut down the Golden Gate? I mean, at this point, when you go to the website of the organizers, they're not just a U.S. movement, they're a worldwide movement. What does that say about what Israel is doing with the U.S. in their genocidal war and the impact that's had?
This is a worldwide movement, and it is being felt right here in the U.S. with bridge shutdowns, highway shutdowns. Right here in New York, there's a shutdown of three different universities going on. Monday, shutdown of one road after another. It's really incredible. In Chicago, the airport, we could look. I can't even remember how many shutdowns are going on. But I do want to close by saying that the U.S. has used Israel against the Arab people, the people of the entire Middle East, in the same way that they've used Taiwan against China.
Indeed.
In the same way that they've used Ukraine against Russia. They They
Thank you for
prop
that.
Up a state for their own
Thank you for
corporate
that.
Benefit right here.
Thank
and
you.
It is using and trying to destroy an
Thanks.
Entire people for their profit.
Sorry, Sarah Flanders, fresh out of time, International Action Center. Vincent James, thank you. Podcaster and founder, Daily Veracity from L.A. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikko Vitale and the team, it's goodbye.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lessons: prevent yourself from getting a virus in our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, an honor to be here on A to Z talking about an Islamic lifestyle and all the different beautiful things that it includes. So, prevent yourself from getting a virus in our Islamic lifestyle. You know, we all kind of went past that whole coronavirus COVID-19 thing, you know, a couple of years back. And I mean, that was something that was just so incredibly stressful and frustrating, and all the social distancing and masks and, you know, hand washing. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala help us and protect us from that kind of a situation, you know. But what was that? That was apparently a virus, and that virus would enter your body and it would make you sick, and then, you know, all of these other things that we do not want to recall or remember ever again in our life. So what kind of a virus are we talking about when it comes to A to Z and Islamic lifestyle? Well, we're definitely not talking about the COVID-19 or the cold and flu virus or influenza or these kind of things. We are talking about a virus which is a virus that impacts our soul, it impacts our spirituality, and it impacts our Islamic lifestyle. Isn't this just so interesting? So these viruses are, I guess, these bad things that our inputs take in, and those bad things that our inputs are taking in have a negative and a harmful effect upon our spirituality and our Islamic lifestyle as a whole. And so it is these kind of viruses that we need to be very careful that they do not enter our body. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about how we need to protect ourselves from viruses. And these viruses, for example, listening to haram music, listening to music which is religiously prohibited, looking at movies or clips or shorts that are haram to watch. They are religiously prohibited, you know, from watching those kind of things. That is a virus. Eating things which are haram, eating things which are religiously prohibited, is another virus. Saying things, for example, and this is kind of like outputs, and in reality we output viruses. So, but we're talking about the intakes that are viruses, and that those are haram things, religiously prohibited things, and they are viruses because they hurt our, you know, spiritual health, and they hurt our Islamic lifestyle. So we have to prevent ourselves and protect ourselves because these viruses are harmful. These are, you know, these sinful things that we are inputting, whether we are watching or we are listening, I mean, primarily, or we are eating. These are primarily the three inputs from which we are taking in these kind of, you know, spiritual viruses, if you will. And we need to protect ourselves. Watching things which are haram, you know, is a virus that totally destroys our soul, same as listening to things which are haram destroys our soul. And so when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle, we have to make sure that we protect ourselves and watch our inputs, our eyes, our ears, you know, our food and drink intake, in order to prevent ourselves from intaking viruses which will be harmful to our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
It took the Turkish president more than 3 days to come up with a statement on Iran's retaliatory attack on Israel. Erdogan blamed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for trying to spread conflicts and create tensions in the region through provocations. He added that those who did not voice their rejection of Israel's aggression on Gaza for several months are today condemning Iran's response.
İsrail'in uluslararası hukuku.
The main one responsible for the tension that gripped our hearts on the evening of April 13 is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his bloody administration. Israel is trying to provoke a regional conflict, and its attack on Iran's embassy in Damascus was the last drop.
Turkish government was criticized by the opposition for its silent position from regional tension. Deputy Chair of Republican People's Party Erhan Uzgel said he was astonished not to see a single reaction or statement by Erdogan's cabinet or his ministers after the attack.
Amid such an important development in our region and a military assault launched directly by another state targeting Israel for the first time since the October War in 1973, amid such an escalation and such great tension in the region, we're astonished to observe that not a single official, especially the Minister of Foreign Affairs, has made any comment on this issue.
Meanwhile, an opposition parliament member slammed the AK ruling party's double standard, saying they pray for the children of Gaza on one hand while selling a fuel that is used to bomb those children on the other.
Can you imagine this hypocrisy? On the one hand, they are praying for the children of Gaza, and on the other hand, selling fuel to Israeli jets. You say Al-Quds is your red line. You are sending terrorism to Quds. You have Gaza children in one hand and the green dollars on the other hand. Shame on you.
Turkey holds significant importance in the region, and every development has an impact on Turkey politically and economically. Therefore, as experts say, the only way Turkey's silence can be explained is by linking it to the economy. And it is also the reason why Ankara did not immediately cut trade ties with Israel, and it merely severed diplomatic relations. Many believe a country like Turkey and a leadership like the Justice and Development Party were expected to not only defend Iran, but also stand by its Muslim neighbor against Israel.
Turkey had been silent about this issue, but as of yesterday, support came from President Erdogan, blaming Israel and supporting Iran. This was very important and provided a clear and good response. True, Turkey has economic relations with Israel, but if Turkey wants to develop and enhance its relations with Eastern countries, such as Iran, Iraq, Azerbaijan, and even Syria, it can reach a good place regionally. While Turkey has economic relations with Israel, its relationship with Iran goes much further. Therefore, Turkey should definitely stand by Iran in this matter.
Many believe it is time for Turkey to choose where to stand, rather than trying to verbally support the resistance and continue to press ahead with its Western and Israeli collaborations. Erdogan's comments on Iran's retaliatory attacks came late, just like the decision to cut a trade with Israel was late. It seems Ankara is walking a very thin line in its ties with Iran amid fears of harming economic relations with the Israeli regime. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
After days of anticipation, Iran unleashed a barrage of missiles and drones against Israeli targets in the occupied territories. The legitimate response came after Israel attacked Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st, violating all international laws and conventions.
Iran's response comes within the international laws, specifically Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, which gives Iran the legitimate right to defend its national security. The Iranian attack on Israel has changed the geopolitical map in the region, and it was a strong warning to the evil regime.
The Iraqi people, as well as resistance leaders, hailed the Islamic Republic for the unprecedented response, dubbed Operation True Promise, which was within the inherent right of self-defense that entitles any country to protect its diplomatic institutions. Iran's retaliation came after the UN Security Council failed to condemn Israel's attack, which killed 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps.
The resistance and the people of Iraq surely stand by the Islamic Republic of Iran amid the failure of international community and the UN Security Council to condemn the Israeli attack on the Damascus consulate. Iran had all the rights to defend itself and respond with proper means and timing.
The significant operation clearly shows that Iran will not hesitate to take action against any threat to its citizens and institutions. Now, with its capabilities and military evolution, Iran has significantly changed the rules of battlefield in modern times.
Iran's retaliatory operation, which came after a long time of strategic patience in the face of Israeli's brutalities, shows that the Tel Aviv regime's days of hit and run are over. And Iran does not hesitate to exact a devastating revenge on its enemy, despite its all-out Western support. Muslim Salem, Baghdad.
Iran's retaliatory strikes on Israeli-occupied territories have drawn admiration and praise in Afghanistan from both the country's ruler, the Taliban, and the Afghan people. They said the reprisal strikes were completely legitimate, justifiable, and have expressed their support for Iran in the face of hostilities.
Long live and fingers crossed to the leader of Iran and to the brave nation and IRGC of Iran for their bravery in hitting the occupying Israel. They did this while many Muslims, like Saudi rulers, are indifferent to the cause and values of Muslim world. Praise Ansarullah of Yemen and Hezbollah and any nation who stands for the Islamic and human rights of Muslim people.
We are happy that Iran carried out the retaliatory strikes on Israel. Every Muslim should feel proud because the bully occupying Zionist regime came under fire. Look, Israeli forces have been oppressing our brothers and sisters in Palestine for decades. It's the time for all Muslim countries to unite and show the aggressors that we can and we have such capabilities.
The Taliban-run foreign ministry issued a statement on Sunday declaring Iran's recent attack on Israel as a legitimate defensive action. It added that Israeli genocide must be stopped in Gaza. Experts say the Afghan ruling authorities' support for Iran's reprisal actions and the Palestinian cause shows Muslims are now united against Israel, and hatred towards the Tel Aviv regime is now everywhere across the Muslim world.
Decades of Israeli occupation in Palestine and its atrocities have made all Muslims hate this regime and call for the regime to be crushed. Over the past few years, the attacks carried out by Hamas and Hezbollah shattered the Israeli regime's grandeur. Iran's strikes against Israel came amid Israel's devastating and deadly bombing campaign against Gaza.
The Afghan people also showed their anger with Israel for its war crimes in Gaza. They call for an immediate ceasefire in war-torn Gaza and demand that the international community help end the war and support Palestine in the face of Israeli invasion.
Afghanistan stands firm beside brotherly Iranian nation. Palestinian cause is bringing the two neighbors even closer. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Described as an act of self-defense, the Yemenis regard the extensive missile and drone strikes carried out by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps on the Israeli-occupied territories as a response to the Israeli regime's assault on Iran's consular building in the Syrian capital Damascus.
We consider the Iranian strikes against the Israeli entity a legitimate attack and a response to the Israeli attacks that violated Iran's sovereignty by hitting its consulate in Syria. The Iranian attack is a legitimate move to punish Israel and is part of measures to stop the regime's ongoing crimes since October 7.
The public sentiment aligns with the official stance as locals overwhelmingly endorse the Iranian strikes, stating that the Israeli regime and its allies only understand the language of force.
The Iranian attack is supported not only by Yemenis but also by all free people in the world. The Iranian response sent the message that Iran's capability is real and that all it was seeking was to liberate Palestine and stop the crimes by the Zionist enemy. Today we are facing an exceptional operation because Iran had not carried out an operation of this scale since the end of the Iran-Iraq war. Iran has been characterized by patience and deliberation due to the way it deals with hostile states. This is the first time that Iran has carried out a military operation against its enemies from within Iranian territory. This attack was successful, came at the right time to put the Zionist enemy in its place, and proved that Iran is capable of blowing up Israel.
Over the past few years, Yemeni-Iranian relations have strengthened, especially during the U.S.-backed war on Yemen, initiated by the 2014 revolution. This military campaign aimed to restore a U.S.-aligned former government in Yemen.
People here believe that the recent Iranian attack against the occupied territories significantly impacts Western powers, demonstrating unity among the resistance forces in the region. They view the attack as the beginning of the end for the Israeli regime and its supporters. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Pro-Palestinians in France gathered the day after what was reported to be the first peaceful night in Gaza in 6 months. The reason? The night before, Iran launched a historic missile retaliation against Israel, which prevented Tel Aviv from continuing their attempt at genocide and ethnic cleansing. At the demonstration, there was widespread approval, support, and even gratitude and admiration for Tehran's counterattack against the unprecedented bombing assassination at an embassy.
I'm not an anti-Semite, and as a Muslim, I want us all to live together peacefully, but I see Iran's attack as something good on their part. Iran is the only major country which has had the courage to attack Israel and defend Palestine's innocent civilians. This war can easily stop if Israel can finally realize that they are attempting a genocide.
Those who are occupiers do not have the right to legitimate defense, but Iran does have the right, and they used it to defend Gaza as well. Israel bombs and assassinates people constantly. How can people forget about what Israel has done?
Protesters contrasted Iran's actions with those of the French foreign minister last week. After mentioning the possibility of placing sanctions on Israel over Gaza, he immediately backtracked the next day in front of Parliament.
The French government is quite the accomplice in the genocide that Israel is waging right now. Why aren't there any sanctions despite all these deaths? And when France talks so much about defending human rights, it's simply shameful.
French forces claim to have contributed to Israel's defense. In a major blow to perpetual Israeli hopes of escalating the violence, Washington has already refused to join any potential Israeli attack on Iran. It's uncertain if the cycle of Israeli assassination and Iranian retaliation is now concluded, but Israel has already returned to indiscriminate bombing and mass murder in Gaza, despite 6 months of global outrage, the murder of 34,000 Palestinians, and 76,000 injuries.
Will Israel pursue an even wider war? Will more Arab nations be inspired to join the cause of defending Gaza? What's certain is that many are happy that, for one night at least, the guns aimed at Gaza's civilians finally fell silent. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Pakistanis are showing staunch solidarity with the Iranian retaliatory strikes against the Israeli-occupied territories. Social media platforms overflow with messages of congratulations for Iran's effective response to Israel's atrocities, hailing Iran as a courageous champion of Muslim states willing to confront a Zionist regime, especially following months of atrocities against the Gaza Strip.
We are proud of Iran for taking a stand against Israel's aggression. The Palestinians have been suffering for decades, and it's time someone took action to protect them. Iran's attack shows that they won't tolerate the oppression any longer.
I fully support Iran's decision to strike back against Israel. The Palestinians have been living under siege for decades, and it's high time someone stood up for them. Iran's actions give hope to oppressed people everywhere.
The Pakistani government has echoed both the sentiments of its citizens and voiced grave concerns over escalation of tensions in the Middle East. Islamabad underscored the Israeli blockade of Gaza as a significant factor contributing to the recent wave of tensions, emphasizing the urgent need for international intervention to prevent further escalations in the region.
Iran has done the right thing legally and morally, because Iran has retaliated against Israeli unwarranted aggression and attack on Iranian diplomatic installation in Damascus. And that was a violation of UN Charter and international law. So what Iran has done is the right thing. They have responded in kind, and they have taken the battle to the aggressor, and they have hit Israel.
The people of Pakistan emphasize the urgent need for global intervention to halt the escalation of conflict in the region and call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza.
Iran's attack on Israeli-occupied territories has garnered widespread support from Pakistanis, particularly due to their perceived alignment with the plight of people in Gaza. The warm reception of Tehran's operation by the Pakistani nation highlights its desire for a more assertive response to Israel's ongoing atrocities against Palestinians. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
German police have stormed the pro-Palestine conference in the capital Berlin and arrested a number of participants. The Palestine Congress was an important event for the Palestinian solidarity movement in Europe. It was set to be held in the German capital from April 12 to 14. The participants aimed to denounce Israeli apartheid and genocide and Germans' complicity in the genocide of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
We are the Palestine Congress. We accuse the Israeli state of carrying out genocide. And we accuse the German government of supporting, of abetting, of making possible this genocide.
On Friday afternoon, several hundred activists assembled in South Berlin to attend the conference. Soon after the conference started, it was interrupted by the city's police, which had dispatched more than 900 police officers to the area. Outside the conference venue, police officers arrested a man for hoisting a Palestinian flag on a building. The participants inside the conference venue also faced repression. Even the registered journalists were refused entry by the police officers who had been deployed inside the conference hall.
I was in the list, and as the moment as I came, they told me I'm not allowed to enter because there were too many people already inside.
The first part of the conference focused on the history of Palestine.
May marks 76 years since the Palestinian Nakba, 76 years of colonization, of forced exile. However, next month also marks 76 years of resilience, 76 years of a struggle for liberation.
The German police stormed the event during a speech by the Palestinian researcher Salman Abu Sitta, who addressed the conference via video link because he had been not allowed to enter Germany. Police said he was subject to a ban on political activity in the country.
The Palestine Congress was happening. We were watching a video. The police came and shut down the electricity. They didn't give a justification about it. They didn't tell us why. Nevertheless, the police came here, shut it down, said it in the loudspeaker. People are supposed to leave the building right now. You see, they're already taking people.
Chaotic scenes followed. At least two people were arrested inside the hall and several others were interrogated. German Interior Minister Nancy Faeser hailed the police, saying it was good how the police had reacted.
An hour after the start of the conference, German police stormed the conference hall because of a speech on the history of Palestine. In an act of extreme repression, they broke up the conference, declaring it an illegal assembly. However, the Palestine Solidarity Movement vows to continue the conference. Dieter Reinisch from Berlin.
Just one day after France's foreign minister earned praise for saying that sanctions on Israel could be coming over their refusal to allow humanitarian aid to Gaza, he quickly backtracked in a session before Parliament. Many are saying the episode revealed the uniquely powerful sway Zionism has in France.
France, although it has the biggest Jewish community in Europe, has also the most extreme right-wing anti-Palestinian Jewish community in Europe. And this community, this Jewish community in France, has a lot of saying and a lot of control over the media, over the political class. So you have very few people within this community who are protesting what's going on in the Middle East. Not like the United States and Great Britain.
The majority of France's Jews fled from former French colonies in Africa once those countries gained independence in the 1950s and 1960s, and they reportedly brought with them stringent anti-Arab and pro-imperialist views. In 2019, French Parliament controversially and incorrectly equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, and they are currently reviewing a proposal to fully criminalize anti-Zionism.
They're saying straight, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Therefore, any criticism of Zionism, any criticism of Israel, means you are a criminal because you're an anti-Semite. And so it's killing all debate. Now, all throughout the collective West, but especially in France, the number one threat to freedom of speech is the Zionist movement and the pro-Israeli movement. And I weigh my words because it's very, very dangerous to say something like that in France because you'll find yourself in court.
Since October 7th, support for Hamas and even support for Palestine is often being prosecuted as so-called apology for terrorism. Pro-Palestinian demonstrations were banned nationwide for weeks, leading to thousands of fines on protesters, with protesters arrested and prosecuted for apology for terrorism for as little as carrying a Palestinian flag. Without the ability to openly criticize the policies of Israel, many believe it's difficult to imagine that Paris will reduce its unconditional support for Tel Aviv, no matter how many atrocities and war crimes they commit against Palestinians. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
The
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Back to Reality. Well, this is Asma. Once more, I have the honor to be your host in today's episode. And, of course, like always, we have two very dear guests. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Muzaffar, and assalamu alaikum, Sister Nahid.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
And as the ritual of this program goes, I would like you to introduce yourself briefly.
First of all, assalamu alaikum to you and all your dear listeners. Well, I'm Nahid. I'm a graduate of TFO, and I've been studying and researching on Muslim issues, and especially Muslim women issues. And I'm so glad and honored to be here with you.
Yeah, so good. And you, brother?
I am Muzaffar Haider from the UK. I've been studying in the Hawza for the past 10 years in the holy city of Qom.
I wish both of you luck and success. There are some situations in life in which you suddenly, very much suddenly, in an epiphanic moment, come to realize that, okay, what I'm doing? And what is this road that I have taken? Am I on the right track? Am I doing the rightest thing I should do? Or I'm just wasting my energy on somewhere, on something, on someone that is not gonna give me anything, that's not gonna do any benefit to me?
But you know, life is not predictable. I don't expect life to be this way. I surely ask about others' opinion. Mm-hmm. I try to counsel with some people. I try to talk to the therapist. We have psychology for this. We have our religion. We have psychologies. We have too many tools to know our situation, yeah, and to be able to recognize the situation well. But life is not predictable. First, we should know this.
There is another thing which is very important. Human beings are in a constant process of change.
Yes.
Like, today I might have some opinions, but if you see me 2 years later, I might not have those opinions anymore.
That's why life is just going on. We cannot predict it, and we cannot expect it to be this way.
It's so predictable.
We can decide at the moment. We can leave the moment. We can understand our moments. We can understand our place in the world, especially in a place that life is just being information secured. Mm-hmm. We need to gain those information. We need to be able to recognize ourselves.
But that's very difficult. So, brother, how do we recognize we're on the right track?
It's never the case that, oh, I'm focusing on something and then I'm like, oh, I wasn't supposed to be doing this. This is a waste of time.
But you know, sometimes you pick a job, you feel like, okay, this is going to be good. Like, you go so passionately into that job, but then it turns out to be nothing but a waste of time.
Yeah, alhamdulillah, I never felt like that. I know that I can identify with the feeling, mm-hmm. because maybe I have felt like that, but then when you go back and analyze, you're like, no, I learned a lot from that job. I gained a lot from that job. You know, I there's so much experience that I've now got, which I would never have had before. Even the really boring jobs, by the way.
So if you take it this way, then there's nothing that is a waste of time.
They bring out the experience for you. If you look at it this way, we can understand it better. Like, imagine I had a very boring job. I didn't like it. Then I talked to some people. I searched about it, and then I changed my job. But that previous job was an experience for me. I learned from it.
It was an experience, but it would still keep a very sad experience, sad impression in your mind.
Not necessarily sad. You know, in our life, we have experienced tiresome. We can say, but you know, in our life, we have too many experiences that many of them were not sweet for us. But we learned from them, and we are living the rest of our life using those experiences. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm saying they are not a waste of time, but yeah, we can label them as a hard time or not enjoyable time, mm-hmm. in which we were not enjoying the thing we were doing, we felt bad. But now that we look at it, we are remembering those experiences.
Let's go for a break, and then we'll come back. Welcome back. This is Back to Reality that you're listening to. So, sister, you were just as a reminder, we were talking about the idea of how should I know that I'm going on the right or on the wrong track?
You know, years ago, I've been working for a place where